Generally, back again, doing another interview episode. This time we've got the lovely Matthew Rosenberg, the guy behind New Mutants, Dead Souls, Multiple Man, Astonishing and Uncanny X-Men, the independent titles We Can Never Go Home, Four Kids Walk Into a Bank, and your favorite street-level characters, Punisher and Kingpin. Matthew, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me.
How you doing?
I am good. I'm very tired, but I'm good.
I would imagine you're on your kind of your media blitz. I saw on Twitter that you offered to go on essentially not any podcast, but I'm looking to go do podcasts and interviews. So I'm grateful that you had the time for me because I have zero doubts about the amount of requests that are flooding your Google calendar right now.
Yeah, you know, it's I always do email interviews and phone interviews for print and websites and stuff, and I feel like I kind of blow off podcasts because I'm always like, well, you know, that's like a sit down commitment where I have to, like, you know, in an email interview I'll do it at like 4 a.m. and just, you know, end of the day. And I was like, I gotta stop blowing off all the podcasters. So I was like, yep, let's just do it. My December is my apology tour to podcast people I've blown off. So,
well, we all appreciate it, man. And it is. It can be an awkward thing. So I understand the convenience of doing an email. Like you said, you can kind of at your own leisure, you can work on it and come back to. I mean, you know, whatever, you could work it out on a plane. It's one of those things you can kind of do wherever. And you're right, a podcast is very much like a, all right, I've got to set aside like this much time. Like, I've got to make sure, you know, if you're doing a video, like we talked a little bit off mic before, you asked if it was a video call or audio, and you were just like, well, I just want to make sure, you know, throw a clean shirt on or whatever. And it's like, you don't have to worry about that when you're, you know, it's 4 a.m. and you're just kind of watching a movie and replying to, you know, the questions or whatever.
Yeah, I also realized I probably don't have a clean shirt, so it could be video. It doesn't matter.
Well, hey, man, that makes two of us. So, like I said, fair is fair. One of the things I wanted to start off with is for me personally, I think one of the things that kind of makes you a writer that I have an affinity for is your like a punk rock and kind of hardcore background. Because I know you come from like a music scene and labels and touring and booking bands and kind of the whole thing. Moving from that to comics, was that kind of an easy transition for you because you were already had spent so many years kind of doing like the DIY thing and hustling and touring and self-promoting, that sort of a thing?
I mean, yeah, in some ways, yes. Like I've done sort of everything in music that doesn't involve actually having talent. so I like, you know, I tour manage bands, not that isn't a talent, tour managers, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
I assume that your podcast has tons of tour managers listening to it.
There's at least two.
Yeah, there you go. I like tour managing bands and did guitar tech and sold merch and then put out records and, you know, ran a merch company and did management and, you know, just like all these music adjacent things. And I sort of had a good handle on, I think, like, you know, all the different facets of getting music out there and sort of reaching people with music in a way. And I realized when I sort of transitioned to making comics that like comics was a lot easier.
Really?
To do that. Yeah. I mean, there's one, you know, unless you're doing like self-published or like, you know, zine type mini comic things.
Yeah.
Like there's one distributor and everyone buys from them. Whereas, like, you know, I used to do retail calls for my record label, and I'd call a store, and they'd be like, yeah, your record sounds cool. Who distributes you? And I'd be like, oh, these people. And I'd be like, we don't buy from them. Thank you, and hang up on me.
Oh, my God.
Be like, yeah, and so it's just like, yeah, I mean, comics are sold in one type of store. They kind of carry, you know, most shops are willing to listen to you, carry everything. It's just a sort of smaller version of the music industry in a lot of ways, like sort of more focused and condensed. So I was like, well, I have this skill set of that kind of thing, of the hustle. And I firmly sort of went into it. My motto was like, I'm never going to be the best writer in the room, but I can definitely be the hardest working writer in the room. And so like, you know, that was just my thing was like, you know, I was doing self-publishing comics and doing 18 conventions a year and like going out and shaking hands and meeting people. And, you know, I was sleeping on couches and all that stuff because I knew how to do that. And so that to me was a big advantage when I started. I mean, I don't think it's for everyone, but for me, like, you know, I knew how to get get people to look at books. I knew how to get like my stuff into people's hands and that kind of thing. And that was really helpful for sure.
Oh, for sure. And I think that's something too, a lot of people, a lot of creatives, I think, struggle with in a big way too. I think, you know, people have this need to kind of create and get these things out of them. And it's just like, you get into that business of wanting to create it and get it out of you, but you also want other people to experience it and be able to connect with it. And not everybody has that skill set where it's like, oh yeah, this is this thing I made. Like, you can read it if you want. Like, some people just don't have that hustle. Like, it's not an easy thing to just develop like that. So it's definitely a valuable skill.
For sure. And I think writing, you know, is sort of writing draws a lot of reclusive kind of people. And, you know, myself included, like, I'm kind of a little bit of a recluse. And like, it's hard to be like, you know, the indie comics writer, like, you know, I talk to like aspiring comics creators all the time, and they're like, yeah, I just want to sit down and write. Like, that's what I want to do. Yeah. And I was like, that is such a small percentage of the job. Like, you know, it's like, you know, it's like a baseball player being like, I just want to hit.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't work that way.
You actually, yeah. Like, you have to train, you have to, like, you know,
yeah, there's a whole world of responsibilities that kind of comes with it.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, I remember once being on a panel and someone, it was like a writing panel in comics, and people were like, what percentage of your time, work time, is actually writing? And like, all of the writers on stage agreed. They were like, maybe it's 8%, like,
yeah,
10%. Like, that's a small part of what the job is. You know, for certain people and certain things, like, it's much bigger. Like, there have been times when it's been, you know, 80% for me, but on an indie level, like, yeah, it's unfortunately not just writing, which, you know, would be awesome if it was, but often it is not.
Yeah. And that would actually kind of, you mentioned it a little bit in your answer there. I was curious how similar or dissimilar do you feel like those communities are, as far as like coming from punk and hardcore to the comic book fandom?
You know, it's a tricky question. I think both of them are funny because they talk a lot about community and being a community. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of instances where you're like, this isn't actually what a community is or does. You know, I there are a lot of good things in that come from the comics community and the music community, especially like the punk and hardcore scenes. Like, there's a lot of good community stuff that I see. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of times when, like, I feel like, you know,
it's shooting itself in the foot.
Yeah, or just like, it's not really coming together in the way that it should. I mean, like, there's wonderful things, like, you see, like, you know, the Hero Initiative is like coming together and bringing a lot of comics pros together to help older comics pros. And like, you know, I think when, you know, you'll see like a comic shop that's in trouble, and you look at their GoFundMe, and it's a ton of comic creators going out and donating money and stuff. And, oh, yeah. And there's where I see the sort of parallel. But, you know, and I think, in terms of creative, I feel like there's a similar sort of thing, like aspiring creators and, you know, comics writers and artists who get their foot in the door, sort of a lot of them are helping the people behind them. And, you know, you sort of see it in the same way that like a band going on tour is taking their friends and,
yep,
you know, get opening slots for cool young bands who are hustling and that stuff. I definitely see the correlation, but, you know, I think at the end of the day, both of them are sort of, for better or worse, and you know, dominated by the fact that they're also communities focused around business. Like,
yeah,
we want to say they're communities focused around art, but also it's around business.
Yeah, it's just as much a commerce, you know, thing too.
Yeah, I mean, like, you go to some, you know, like in. You know, sort of the self-publishing and indie and microcomics scene are sort of maybe closer to what I think of as a comics community in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, I mean, it's complicated, I guess.
Oh, absolutely.
My answer, but
talking about those communities. So you're a very active guy on not on social media, but on Twitter specifically. And that's one of the things I really like about you is... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, maybe too active on Twitter, but sure.
sometimes all we all are. It all depends, I guess. It's an easy trap to fall into too, because you have unlimited access to all these people, and all these people have unlimited access to you, and it's, you know, could be anything from someone baiting you and it's, you got to fight to not take the bait, versus it might be somebody who just wants to have a really great conversation with you. And it's kind of a gamble of which one you're going to get sometimes.
Sure. Yeah.
But one of my thing, my favorite things about you on there is I feel like your, how much you give a shit shines, really shines through there. I feel like you're very much like a kind of a guy who I don't even know, like you wear the how much you give a shit on your sleeve, kind of. Like, it's very, very apparent how much you care about, you know, the fans and the books and what you're doing. But I guess the question I have here is it hard to do that with the way like comics and internet culture is at this point?
Yeah, you know, it is and it isn't. You know, I grew up reading comics and I've loved comics my whole life, and I think comics has helped me through a lot of dark places, and like I see the value in that, and I love that, and I love comics for it, and like a lot of my closest friends have come from comics, and a lot of people I really care about, and so I love giving back to that, and I love the idea that, you know, comics, the thing I like about comics, I remember I was on a panel once and it was about music and comics, and it was like me and Kieran Gillen and a couple other people. And they asked, you know, us like, what do we see the correlation between music and comics? And Kieran gave a great answer that I would butcher if I tried to do, but it was something about, you know, like David Bowie becoming Ziggy Stardust and this sort of transformative power of comics and like just the, you know, giving into the imagination. And it was really beautiful and very eloquent, and he's very smart.
Oh, absolutely.
But then I, you know, went after him and I was like, you know, I don't want to, I love Kieran's answer, but like, that's not what comics is for me. For me, comics is, you know, like we said, it's like, I see it in the same way I see, you know, punk and hardcore growing up, like that there's no barrier, you know, there's no barricade at the shows.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You know, I worked in a comic shop. Now I make comics. I don't really see the difference. Like,
yeah, no, I agree. Know, yeah.
And like for fans, it's like, yeah, you know, you go to there and fans want to be making comics and they read the books. And I think like, I just don't see the point in distancing any of that or separating it. It's all part of the same thing, like retail and press and
yeah,
and
it's all that same fans. Community.
Yeah, it's what comics is. And so for me, like, being accessible just as part of that, like I want to be there. And like, sure, you know, when you get to a Marvel or a DC or a place like that, like you get a lot of different people with different takes, and you get a lot of people who are really love things and very excited about things, and it's awesome. And you get a lot of people who are very invested in things, and that's why monthly comics can exist, is because people are super passionate about this stuff. So I never take it for granted. But with that passion, you get people who, you know, get their feelings hurt and get offended, and
yeah,
and you know, that's just part of it. And I always try and be polite and deal with that. But sure, you know, you get a couple death threats thrown at you, you get cursed out a lot.
Yeah, that's I mean, it can't be fun to deal with that kind of stuff. Like, it's not, I'm sure it's not fun to wake up in the morning and check Twitter and see, you know, 17 mentions from one guy who can't stand you because, you know, you're quote unquote like the worst writer of whatever you know what I mean, like whatever property, like everyone's got their hot take kind of a thing.
No, yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, my feeling is always like, if someone went out and spent $4, $3, whatever on something I wrote, like I want them to enjoy it.
Yeah,
I don't want it to bum them out, but I'm also like, you know, I'm an adult and I understand that like not everything is for everyone.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, if you didn't like it, like, I'm sorry you spent $4 on it. If I could, I would, you know, give you those $4 back. But like, I'm also like, well, you know, there's other stuff you will like. It's fine. Right,
and it's so the gamble of trying something. I mean, you may not like it. You may find something you love. Like, I don't understand how that $4 isn't worth the gamble to some people.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, obviously $4 means different things to different people, but sure, I tend to agree. But yeah, I mean, it's never fun, but I'm also like, you know, I understand how the internet works, and you know, these characters are super important to people, and like, yeah. You know, they mean the world to people, and they're helping them through tough times, and like, you know, there are people who just don't want to see Captain America have a bad day, and it's like, well, I get that, but that's actually my job, is to give Captain America a bad day. Like, that's, and I'm sorry, but like, that's why you like him, is because at the end of that, he's going to come out of it and he's going to smile.
Exactly.
And
it's the salute. it all builds character. It's just like real life. I mean,
yeah. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of, it's always funny to me, just because, you know, a lot of the comics writers I know, we all laugh about the fact that people get really upset about certain things, and you want to just be like, just wait. Like, just wait.
Yeah.
There's a resolution. You're in the middle of something. Like, get to the end of it. And, like, you know, and you'll see that people, like, are either like, actually, I like this. And they'll come back around and be like, actually, this was really cool. And it's like, yeah, that's, yeah, okay.
For sure.
You know, like, but, you know, it's a, you take the good with the bad, and there's far more good to making comics than there is bad. So.
Well, good. That's, at least there's that.
Sure.
What did I have next for you? So I was a big fan of your X-Men run. All the pretty much everything you did in the, you know, the kind of X offices of Multiple Man was really so much fun. And New Mutants Dead Souls was really great. The Astonishing run might have been my favorite, as much as I really love the Uncanny, if only for Drunk Vodka Colossus.
Yeah, Drunk Colossus is a very popular character.
I really like that. Did that get a lot of reaction from people?
Yeah, people will talk about it all the time. It's like literally, when I go to conventions, it's like one of the things I have to talk about the most is Drunk Colossus. which, you know, we spent a long time. There was a lot of debate about like what Drunk Colossus should even look like.
Yeah.
I was just like, you know, I think he hasn't shaved or had a haircut or anything. And I think he's in dirty clothes. And like, you know, there's a lot of work into like, well, how would his like raggedy beard look when it was metal? It was a lot of like design.
I love Bearded Colossus has been my favorite kind of change to that character in a long time.
Bearded Colossus is the best. Bearded Colossus is the greatest.
And it's good enough that we got an action figure of it too. Like, you really can't argue it at that point.
Yeah, for sure. And so I meet a lot of Drunk Colossus fans for sure.
Have you seen any Drunk Colossus cosplayers yet? Let me ask you that.
No, I was told there was one at a show I was at, but I did not see
it. Oh my God. I need to see it. I hope the next show I go, C2E2, people better bear down. I better see a Drunk Colossus either there or Heroes Con this year. I swear.
Yeah.
Speaking of cons, are you doing any big shows coming up?
Well, it's the off season.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Right now, no. I mean, I went, I did a lot this year, but I also had to, back out of a bunch of shows for some personal reasons.
Oh, I gotcha.
That was a bummer. I'm probably doing less this year. I've sort of done 4 or 5 years in a row of between 15 and 20.
I was
going
to say, you've definitely been a convention heavy guy. I know that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm up there with the most of them. So, you know, at a certain point, I have a bunch of stuff I'm working on that is going to take a lot of time and attention. So I'm going to do less this year, but I haven't quite figured out what I'm doing yet.
Right.
You know, there's a bunch of places I love going and stuff. So we'll see how it goes.
That's great. Circling back to the X-Men again a little bit. So I know, like I mentioned, it's obviously a very near and dear cast of characters to your heart. I know you learned to read from X-Men comics.
Yes.
You know, they were in your family, your brother had them. So there's zero doubt what the characters mean to you. But like, how big of a deal, for example, getting to bring Jean Grey back? Like, how big of a deal was that to you?
I mean, that was insane to me. That was because that was my first X book. And it was, I don't know, it was very intense. And like, I have a lot of strong feelings about Jean. I love Jean a lot, but I had a very specific thing I wanted to do. And I knew that I was like, this is not what they want. Like, I knew from go, I was like, Marvel wants this to be a big, cosmic, insane thing.
Yeah.
And I don't want to write that. I don't think that's what Jean should have coming back. Because early on, I was like, I don't want to bring the Phoenix back I want to bring Gene back.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, yeah. And I was like, no, I want to emphasize this. This is about Gene, who is a character who's been overshadowed by this giant flaming space bird for a long time. Like, I want to focus on her. And they were like, you don't want the phoenix in the book? And I was like, no, it's in the book. It's a big part of it. But, like,
it shouldn't be the focus.
I was like, I want to make sure that we're clear that this is a Jean Grey book, first and foremost. And they said yes. And then I remember walking into the room, and it was all the senior editors at Marvel. And Axel Alonso was editor-in-chief at the time, and he was there, and the whole X-Men office. And, you know, I went through it, and I finished. And it was just quiet. I could hear my heart beating in my ears. I was like, oh, I fucked this up.
Oh, my God.
And I was just, like, quiet for a second. And then someone was like, so it's a breakup book? And I was like, yes, it is a breakup book. Like, it is a at the end of the day, it's a, I was like, that's not how I would describe it, but yes. And I just remember Mark Paniccia, who was the X-Men editor at the time, just being like, his eyes were just wide, and he was like, so no Shi'ar, no Kree, none of that? I said no. And it was just quiet for a second, and then he went, I love it.
Yeah.
And I was like, it was like the first time I breathed since I stopped talking. And I was like, okay, at least one person, like, you know, you don't want to go to the room and pitch to 9 people and have 9 for 9 be like, that's awful.
Right, yeah, you don't want to hear 9 pens drop in silence.
Yeah, so, and Axel loved it, and everyone was on board, I think, you know, and then they were like, okay, you need to come back in 3 weeks and pitch it to all the Marvel writers. And I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. and so that's what I had to do, and, you know, I just remember... it was my first creative summit, and, you know, the top 12 or 14 writers of Marvel are there. And, you know, Bendis, I finished, and everyone really liked it. And Bendis took me aside after, and he was like, and Brian was like, you pitched a story based on emotion, not on action. And I said, yeah. And he said, that's really hard to do. And you got the room. And he was like, that means you have a good story. And, like, that just meant so much to me coming from Brian.
Oh, yeah, that's a huge, it's high praise right there for sure.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, it was the up until that point, it was the biggest thing in my career. I mean, it still is one of the biggest things in my career. And it just emotionally meant so much to me. It's funny because a lot of casual X-Men fans were like, asking me when it was announced and was coming out, they're like, doesn't she die and come back all the time? And I was like, not really. And I was like, you know, there's young Jean Grey now and blah, blah. And then I'd meet other X-Men fans who were more diehard, and they were like, this is big. And I was like, okay, so I'm not crazy.
Right, yeah. Because she had been dead, like, since when? Morrison's run?
Morrison, yeah.
That's what I thought. That's a long time, I mean, when you think about it.
She appears again in like... Phoenix War Song and End Song, like the Greg Pak book.
Yeah,
but yeah, essentially she'd been dead for 11-12 years when I brought her back.
And if you're not like a comics reader, like, that's for people to know, like, that's a really long time for a character in comic books to remain dead and, like, stay dead and not come back.
Yeah, I mean, there are people who got into comics, read comics for a decade and got out of them, and she was never alive.
Yeah, that is insane to think, because, like, you know, Death of Superman kind of changed all that stuff. Like, prior to that, it wasn't so much of a revolving door kind of a thing. It was very much like a character died, they died.
Yeah, Jean was one of the last of the, like, stay deads. So, yeah, it's a big moment, and you know, I still get people who come up to me and are like, you know, I people cosplay as the last Phoenix in the book, from the book, and, you know, people come up and I've seen a bunch of tattoos from the book.
Oh,
and,
man, that's gotta feel incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's overwhelming and it's crazy, and it you know, like, I've had more than a few people, like, sort of come up and you know, like, sort of, you can tell sometimes, like, people wait online and to talk to me at a show or whatever, and they wait until no one's around because they, like, you know, they sort of have an emotional thing to say.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's you know, most of the time it's not about the book so much as it's about their life or where they are, mm-hmm. or where they've been. And, But, you know, there's something about it that connects with them. And Phoenix Resurrection is one of those books that really does that for people. And I get it a lot. It's always overwhelming. And, you know, it's people are really positive.
Yeah.
You know, it can go the other way, which is
a little intense.
But, I mean, it you know, as far as I'm concerned, like, you know, my mentality has always been, like, if the book really resonates and matters with one person, like, then that's the person I wrote the book for.
Right, you did your job.
It's worth it. Yeah, and you know, it really hit with a lot of people, and so I that book always has a special place for me, for sure.
That's fantastic, and I think that speaks, too, to the test, like, it's a testament to the power of the X-Men and how... Because, I mean, there's fandoms for everything. People love the Avengers. People, you know, live for the Fantastic Four. Like, it's all over the map as far as characters. But for some reason, X-Men feels different in terms of the emotional weight it holds for a lot of people. Like, we met at C2E2 and got to speak for a little bit. But that was the same convention I got to finally meet Chris Claremont for the first time.
Sure,
yeah. And I mean, I came up to it. He was actually on his way to a panel, and there was, I wish I knew the woman's name, but this wonderful C2E2 employee saw me. It was the same thing, like you said, someone kind of hangs back in line because they've kind of got something they want to say, and it's, you know, you want to have that sort of as private of a moment as you can at a convention full of people. And so she kind of waved me over, and I was like shaking like a leaf, and I was like, hey, the X-Men, I love it's so much. And he's just like, calm down. He's like, come here, we'll take a picture. And like, he talked to me, and like, you know, he saw how much it meant to me. And it's, I don't see that as much with other properties, I think. So it's definitely.
For sure. I mean, X-Men definitely is the book that speaks to people in a different way.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm one of those people that, like, it really was like a important part of my life in a lot of different moments. Was like, X-Men was the book I turned to. X-Men was sort of my, you know, helped me through a lot of things.
Yeah, it's like a security blanket.
Yeah, for sure. So I get it. X-Men is pretty major.
So once your Astonishing run ended and you got the opportunity to write Uncanny. I know initially it was a group effort, right? It was you, Ed Brisson, and Kelly Thompson.
It started as you know, the three of us on the weekly book together, because we were all doing X stuff.
Yeah, and on a real quick, just to get this in before you continue your answer, all three of you, the love shines through so much. Like Kelly's stuff with the Rogue and Gambit book, and Ed's, Extermination, I believe it was, that 5 or 6 issue mini. That mini was doing phenomenal.
Yeah, it's great. The funny story about the Extermination is that in the at one of the Marvel Creative Summits, me and Ed were, we sit next to each other a lot just because we're friends. Mm-hmm. And they were like, okay, the X group is going to go. Do you guys want to go in any order? And, you know, we're sort of just pitching stuff and throwing stuff out. And I was like, well, I have a really big thing I want to try and do. So I was like, if you care, I'll go second. And Ed was like, oh, no, that's fine. I just have a quick thing. And Ed pitched Extermination. And then he was like, yeah, and at the end, it's Scott coming back. And my thing was actually a second arc in Astonishing X-Men, which was Scott coming back. And everybody was so excited about Extermination that, like, everyone was just, like, throwing out ideas and getting really excited. It was great. And it was awesome to see because Ed's pitch was great. And then it finished. And they were like, Matt, it's your turn now. And I was like, well.
Funny story.
I was going to try and bring back Scott, but I guess that's not happening. But, yeah, it's a – yeah, it was the three of us working together was super fun. Because we all are huge X fans, lifelong X fans. So,
and it was cool too, because for me, like, and you mentioned Bendis earlier, it's kind of funny. Like, I know he's a divisive writer. A lot of people love his stuff. A lot of people have their gripes, and that's fine. But for me, I loved his X-Men run. I thought it was a really great premise, bringing the O5 into the present, and, you know, once again, Hank McCoy kind of dabbling where maybe he should or should not have. But it was tough kind of being an X-Men fan after he left, because it kind of felt, the books weren't bad, but it kind of felt like there was never any sort of like full on direction. And when you guys came in, like not only did it feel story wise like a successor to Bendis, tonally and character wise, but it felt kind of like cohesive and together in a way it hadn't for a really long time, which is really cool for me as a fan.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I'm a huge Brian is my favorite writer in comics and a big part of the reason I am where I am today in a lot of different ways. So yeah, I mean, his X-Men, I love very much, like all of his work, but, so I appreciate the compliment.
Absolutely. So during Uncanny, obviously we know now, X-Men has become kind of the all encompassing land of Jonathan Hickman and company with this amazing, this amazing, House of X, Powers of 10, these two kind of dual miniseries leading into this whole Dawn of X and these, this wonderful new wave of titles with so many great writers and artists and everybody. So when you're writing Uncanny, like how far along do you find out, like this is going to be a thing that's going to occur in the future? And does that kind of cut your time short, or was it, did you have the opportunity to kind of do what you were shooting to do with Uncanny?
No, Jonathan was working on House and Powers before I was on Astonishing.
Okay.
And before anything, like we knew he was coming the whole time.
Okay. I kind of had that feeling only from that letter that he penned. I believe it was in like Marvel previews for the House of X and Powers of 10 stuff. And it was actually the thing that completely sold me on his X-Men before it even hit, was he had wrote this really beautiful letter about how excited he was about it and stuff. And so it was just that another one of those things, like, you know, with the X-Men, it's like he wrote something about how he couldn't stop smiling walking in to pitch that at the retreat. And it's the same thing, yeah. I imagine you had, you know, getting to pitch, you know, Phoenix to the group and everything.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, Jonathan, we knew Jonathan was coming. I'm a huge fan of his. Like, I didn't know him particularly at the time, but I, you know, just enormous fan of his. I've read everything he's ever done, and I think he's a genius. And basically, you know, they were like, the line is going to end when he takes it, but we sort of want it to end in a specific way. Like, we really want to, like, end the era and give it a sort of a funeral. And that was sort of our marching orders on, you know, that's Mr. and Mrs. X wrapped, and Old Man Logan became Dead Man Logan and wrapped, and Astonishing wrapped, and you know, we all came together to do Uncanny, and it, you know, everything sort of came into that book. So yeah, I mean, we knew, you know, before, I think right, I can't remember exactly when, but like Jonathan walked us through the pitch, through what he was going to do in X-Men for the next couple of years. I think right before we started, it might have been right after, but I think it was right before. But we knew what was coming, like we knew broad strokes, and then we heard the specifics. So yeah, I mean, it was, I was really excited about what he was going to do. And, you know, now seeing how well he's doing it is awesome and, you know, jaw dropping. But we knew that we were ending, you know, what Marvel talks about it in eras of, like, you know, it's X-Men number one to Giant Size number one, and then Giant Size, you know, I don't, yeah. Giant Size to Jim Lee, and Jim Lee to Age of Apocalypse, and Age of Apocalypse to Grant, you know, I think those are the eras they call them. I might define it a little differently.
For sure, yeah.
But basically, they, what Marvel saw it as was, like, what Grant Morrison started with killing 8 million mutants on Genosha, it was our job to end.
Right.
Like, and then there'd be something new. And so that was sort of our marching orders, and it was very heavy and exciting and cool. And initially when they talked to us, it wasn't gonna be called Uncanny X-Men. It was called something else, and we were doing it, and then partway through we got a call that they were like, it's gonna be called Uncanny X-Men. And I remember I was on the phone with CB, the editor-in-chief, and Jordan, who runs the X group. And I was like, you can't call it Uncanny X-Men. And he was like, why? And Jordan was like, why not? And I was like, well, because it's a weekly book and it's 10 issues and it will end before it comes out. Like, people will know it's over before it comes out. They'll think it's a miniseries and you've given it the name of a book, but it's actually like an event. It's something different. And they were like, well, that's actually why we're calling. And they're like, it's going to keep going and you're going to keep going with it.
Wow.
And
so initially it was only going to be those 10 or was 10 issues, right? For,
yeah, initially it was 10 issues. And very early on, they were like, we need more stuff. We need more book.
Yeah.
There's more story that you guys are trying to tell. Jonathan is, you know, needs more time. He needs certain things. We need certain things in place for him. So it was a whole lot of different, like, different needs and wants out of it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, you know, before we'd really been going, I knew that I was getting the tap on the shoulder to sort of run with it after 10, to take it from 10 to 20. It's technically 22, but there's the three issues of War of the Realms, so 25 or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's it was a sort of frantic time of, like, you know, sort of ideas and goal lines changing a lot. Mm-hmm. But it was pretty awesome. It was pretty fun to work on. I mean, I put out 25 issues of X-Men in 9 months.
Yeah, that's a tall order, man, for sure.
Yeah. It's a year's worth of double shift. And
that's insane. Talk about the work that goes into comics. Like, that's got to just ratchet it up to such an unimaginable level.
Yeah. It's funny also because I said that to Jordan. Jordan was like, I can't believe we did 22 issues. And I was like, War of the Realms makes it 25. And he's like, I can't believe we did 25 issues. And not. And I was like, actually, issue 1 is 60 pages. Issue 10 is 30 pages. Issue 11 is 60 pages. And issue 22 is 30 pages.
Yeah.
And so it's actually like 29 issues in my month. And he's like, and he just like stared at me. And he's like, I hate you. I was like, sorry, Jordan. Probably took 5 years off his life.
Right. But it's a good way to take 5 years off, certainly, because you get to read those books. It's certainly a fair trade off.
I mean, that's, you know, that's Jordan.
Right.
All to me. How he wants to give up years of his life. I mean, I would agree, sure. But
with knowing that early on how that kind of massive shift in status quo is going to go, did it kind of leave you open with those remaining issues of Uncanny to just go, you know what, like, I'm just going to pull out all the stops? Like, did it, I guess what I mean is, did it affect your approach to it in a good or a bad way as far as like what you were going to do?
I mean, I had to do certain things. For sure. You know, initially the idea was that there was the end of the X-Men and the end of an era. Issue 11 of my run starts with like, this is the last X-Men story, because we wanted people to like feel that for a little bit. But it's, you know, what would it be like if the X-Men ended here? Because in a sense, what we've known the X-Men to be does end there. And now there's something else. And obviously, you know, I don't want to talk too much about Jonathan's stuff because I hope everyone out there is reading it.
Yeah, but no. If you're not reading it, check it out because it's very much worth your time. Yeah.
It's brilliant, but it's not in trade yet. And so I know that, you know, not everybody is getting on board and
right
yet. So like, I don't want to say too much, but like, yeah, we made certain decisions about stuff we could do because we knew what he was doing. Mm-hmm. And we knew that things could be fixed. We could break things because he had a plan to fix them. And that was sort of the idea. I mean, early on, you know, Marvel said to me, like, Jonathan is bringing the X-Men into a new place and a bright, shining place. And they were like, before they go there, they have to be in their darkest place they've ever been. And I was like, the darkest place they've ever, I remember saying the darkest place they've ever been and being told yes. And in my head, I'm just like, oh, Mutant Massacre. And
right, Kenosha. Yeah. I mean, the X-Men have suffered so many, like, unspeakable tragedies over the course of their existence.
Yeah, and just, like, you know, the Outback. And there's just so much stuff, and I love all that stuff. Like, the Claremont stuff is, you know, one of the things I love about X-Men more than anything else is, like, you know, I say this a lot. Like, the X-Men are saving the world, but they're also fighting to survive in a way that, like, the Avengers, the FF, aren't.
Right.
And for the X-Men, like, there are times when you'd put the book down and be like, I don't know if they are going to survive. Like, I don't know if they are all going to make it. And, like, it's a terrifying feeling. And that to me is, like, ingrained in X-Men. Just, like, the stakes are different.
Absolutely.
For them than any other stream. And so, like, that was a big thing for me, was, like, I want to make sure that, like, people don't know what the hell is going to happen and are scared. And we wanted to really knock people on their toes and clear the playing field for Jonathan to come in and do what he was going to do, because we knew he was going to, you know, absolutely destroy and crush. I mean, his stuff's amazing. But, like, we wanted to make sure that, like, you know, when he came in and planted a flower, that we'd left the field barren for him. So,
I see what you did, you know, there.
Thank you. yes, I mean, like, you know, the Marvel sort of encouraged me to burn it all down, and like, it was really hard. You know, I love those characters a lot, but it was easier knowing, like, they're going to have a triumphant comeback, and they're going to be in a better place than they've been in years, but they're going to have to go through this.
Exactly.
So
it's kind of finishing that run, and you're going, like, if you only knew what was coming next.
Yeah,
it's like you said, like, you just got to wait, you know, wait up for the next part of the story, kind of, and that's what it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's always funny to me, because, like, for a while people were, you know, getting on me on Twitter because characters were dying, and I get it, and I understand, and I was trying to be like, yeah, you know, it's sad that this person died, and you never want to be like, hey, they're coming back, because that's not
right, yeah, how
stories are supposed to work. But at a certain point, people were yelling at me on Twitter about stuff and being upset about a character dying. And I was like, they're already on covers for upcoming books.
Yeah.
Like, people are like, you killed Havoc. And I was like, Havoc's on the cover of a book that comes out in 3 weeks.
Right.
Like, he's obviously going to be okay.
Plus, everyone loves Havoc. No one's ever going to fully, completely get rid of Havoc.
For sure, yeah.
I love Havoc's that character.
Yeah.
Man, all right. Well, let's talk about what you've got coming out now that the new year is approaching, because you've got some fun stuff coming out. January is Hawkeye, right? January 1st?
January 1st is Hawkeye Freefall number one.
That's quite, yes, a debut date.
yeah, it is. It turns out it's a very difficult day to debut a Comic-Con, but we are one of a bunch of awesome books coming out.
I was
going to
say, it's probably a small release week, too, though, so it's like, all eyes on Hawkeye, kind of.
No.
oh, is it Thor a big week?
Thor number one and Star Wars number one.
Oh, my God.
I mean, Marvel wanted it to be come out swinging on the first day of the year, for sure.
Makes sense. So,
you know, it's exciting to be in there. But, like, you know, I've had a ton of UK people be like, January 1st is a bank holiday. Comic shops aren't getting their comics and they won't be open.
Oh, geez.
And I was like, well, I guess it comes out January 2nd for you guys. So yeah, January 1st is me and Otto Schmidt, Hawkeye number one, Hawkeye Freefall. I'm really excited about it. It's Clint is one of my favorite characters in all the Marvel Universe, and we're doing something really that I think is really fun and kind of different with him. And I think when people see where we're going, I had one person online say to me as a joke, it would be crazy if you did this. And I was like, yeah, that'd be crazy, but it's totally what we're doing. And I was like, oh, geez.
Does that kill you that you can't just be like, dude, yeah, totally, it's what's happening?
The funniest ever on that was when me and Kelly and Ed were doing Uncanny X-Men, mm-hmm, because someone literally guessed the entire story.
Oh, my God,
and, like,
really?
I mean, not all of it, but, like, they guessed, like, a lot of major things to the point we were like, how are they doing this?
Oh, my God.
And,
man,
like, everyone else was guessing stuff that was totally not even vaguely what we were doing or anywhere near it. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, nobody knew that X-Man was coming, or that, you know, all these things were coming, that it was going to be a Legion X-Man battle and all these things. And this guy was just like, I bet X-Man returns. And we were like, how did he guess that? And then he just went off and did all these things and was like, I bet it's Legion versus X-Men. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, we were all just kind of like,
yeah, no one, who would have ever, like, I would never even think to suggest that, let alone, like, nail it that way.
But yeah, it's always funny when people, you know, because you hear hundreds and hundreds of people guess what the book is. And, like, our book in Hawkeye Freefall, like, you know, it's Clint and he's fighting the Hood, and he's sort of become obsessed with taking down the Hood. And the Hood is, you know, someone who's, like, a little out of Clint's league, and it's a little more dangerous than, like, Clint realizes. But also there's a new Ronin, and this new Ronin is running around, like, wrecking things and causing chaos, and, like, it's just making Clint's life so much harder because everyone thinks it's him, and he keeps being like, it's not me.
Oh, no.
Like, and so it's this whole, like, everything is sort of, all these different elements of his life are sort of falling apart all at once,
yeah,
and, like, unraveling. But who the new Ronin is like a mystery, and people keep guessing, and like no one's guessed correctly, which makes me happy.
Well, that's good.
It is one of the things, yeah, that people like guess. You know, when you have something like this, people, you see, like, I've seen hundreds of guesses, and it's just like, oh, yeah. So every time someone, like, lands on something that is something, it's always funny to be like, hey, good for you. You want to be like, good for you, man.
Right. You nailed it. You get points for solving the puzzle kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Something else you've got coming up, and I actually had to do a double take to make sure I saw the title right, is you are bringing Forceworks back to the Marvel Universe.
I am, yeah.
That rules.
Yeah, I'm very excited. Hawkeye launches in January, and Forceworks launches in February. Forceworks is just a 3-issue mini, but Dan Slott is doing the big Iron Man 2020 event.
That's exciting.
Next year. Yeah, and it's awesome. And Dan walked me through it, and you know, it's just great. It's like what he's been building towards, and it's awesome. And I think it's really just incredibly fun, and. You know, Dan's one of those people who just, like, gets the universe so well and understands, like, things that should be obvious but no one's realized. Like, he sees them really clearly. Mm-hmm. And Iron Man 2020 is like that. And that kind of thing is, it really gets me. And I just got excited. And then they were going over and they were like, yeah, there'll be a new Forceworks title. And I was like, Forceworks book? And I loved Forceworks when I was a kid, and I was like, what's up with that? And they were like, do you want to do Forceworks? And I was like, I very much do. And they were kind of shocked. And I think just the chance to play in Dan's shadow for a little bit is always fun, and like Forceworks. And then, you know, I said to them, I was like, I have one rule. I was like, I want War Machine and I want US Agent. And they were like, yeah, that's fine.
like I don't think anyone's knocking the door down to get US Agent. Is that what they're saying?
Yeah. I they were like, really? And I was like, yeah, he's on the original and I want him back, and you know, I want the two of them. And then, you know, I was lucky because they were like, well, who else do you want? And I was like, can I get Mockingbird and Quake? And they were like, yeah. And it was like the fastest I've ever had a team approved in a comic.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, they're all characters I love, and so I sort of had this story in my head, and it's just a 3-issue thing, but I'm really excited about it. It's going to be very fun. It's part of the 2020, but I think some cool stuff is going to come out of the Forceworks book itself.
That's awesome. Who knows? Maybe we'll luck out and that'll become an ongoing as well.
Yeah, maybe.
And Quake you've written before, right?
Yeah. My first single issue at Marvel, I wrote a Quake one-shot, actually, with Daniel Warren Johnson.
What a nice guy that dude is, right?
Dan? Yeah.
Oh, my God. He's actually you're only the third interview I've done. He was my second, and he was so wonderful to have on. It was a really great conversation.
Dan and myself have a odd feud going where we keep finding ourselves in the same restaurant and paying for each other's meals without telling the other person.
That's so fun.
Yeah. He got me in New York, and then... a year later I got him in the same restaurant in New York.
New York Comic Con, I'm assuming.
Yeah. And then he got me in last month in Italy.
Oh wow.
He was eating in the same restaurant. No, in England. I saw him in Italy, but in England, in Harrogate, by Thought Bubble Festival. Like I had dinner with a couple comics people, and he was eating in the same restaurant. And when we asked for the check, they were like, the gentleman who was sitting at that table paid for it. So we have this ongoing war of paying for each other's meals, which is an expensive war to have.
Right. But it's a battle of politeness.
Yeah.
And then you had a couple other things come out, right? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, I wrote Quake in that one shot with Dan, that's in, collected in a S.H.I.E.L.D. 50th anniversary thing that's very fun.
Nice.
But then I wrote her in Secret Warriors for 12 issues. She was the lead in that book. So I have a very strong affinity for Quake. She is one of my favorite characters in the Marvel Universe. So she pops up in things a lot that I write. She was in The Punisher, just because when I need someone, she is someone I always go to. What was your question?
You had, I think there was just a couple other things you had coming up, right? You have an Image book coming out?
I do, yeah.
That was exciting to see that you had a book coming out with them, because that's, I have loved that company since I was a kid.
Yeah, same. I have a book called What's the Furthest Place from Here that'll be out in the spring, we're hoping. It's Tyler Boss, who was my partner on Four Kids Watching the Bank. And it's just me and him again doing a sort of dystopian coming of age story that we're really excited about. It's like, you know, we sort of looked at Four Kids Walking to a Bank, which, you know, people dug and people were really kind to us about. And, you know, early on, we were like, we should do the exact opposite book now. So it's a very different kind of thing. It's dystopian and it's sci-fi and it's weird and it's got horror elements. And,
oh, that's fun.
You know, yeah, Four Kids Walking to a Bank was sort of us taking a ton of things that we love and mashing them together. And this is like everything else that we love mashed together. So this is like the part two, but it's not at all related, but it's fun.
It's like a spiritual successor almost.
Yeah. Yeah. And we wanted to have it out last year, but a bunch of stuff got in the way for me. So, but we're getting back into the swing of it now, and we've got about 100 pages done, and it's awesome. And it's one of those things that like I get frustrated that people can't see it yet, because it's Tyler is a genius and it just looks awesome. And so
that's exciting, man. I'm looking forward to all of that. Forceworks and I know it has an official release date. Does What's the Furthest Place have one yet? Did you say? I'm sorry.
No official release date.
Okay.
We're figuring it out with them now.
Gotcha. And then has final order cutoff for Forceworks already hit?
No.
Okay. Well, you want Forceworks, go to your comic shop and tell them you want it, so that way you get a copy, so that when it sells out, you can't complain that you didn't get one.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the best way to get your books, guys.
Yeah. And also, you know, Hawkeye's coming out, and I've already heard from literally about a dozen retailers who are like, yeah, I didn't order enough Hawkeye. They're like, people keep sort of ordering it.
Wow. Like, that's great though. I mean, it's not, it sucks that they don't have the enough orders, but it's great that the demand is there.
You can still get it. Like some shops will still be able to get it. You know, it's one of those things. It's hard to figure out. Like some shops will still be able to get it if you ask for it now, some won't.
Gotcha.
But if you want to read Hawkeye, you know, call your shop now and they will probably have a copy to set aside for you, unless you're one of the almost dozen shops who are like, we don't have any copies.
Yeah.
Cause I get shops who message me and are like, I don't have enough. Like, can you get me some? And I'm like, no, I don't have the ability.
Right. Yeah. It's not my department, unfortunately.
Yeah. I don't handle that. I'm not a printer. I'm very excited about all those stuff, and I hope people dig it. I put a lot into these books, and I'm they're kind of weird things. And you know, I finished X-Men and Punisher, which were both like very big bucket list things for me, and now it's like I just want to do stuff that like I get excited about. And I find that a lot of stuff I get excited about is kind of weird and off the beaten path. Mm-hmm. And so I'm taking a little time to do that and do a little like bizarre tourism, but I think there's an audience I'm hoping that will come with me.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I have no doubts about that. I know I will certainly be following you, my friend.
Oh, thank you.
I thought a fun way to kind of close this out before I let you go is I wanted to see if you could throw out a recommendation for some things you've been enjoying. I'd love to hear like a movie or TV shows you're into, a comic you think people should read, and maybe like a band or album that you think people would like.
All right. Okay. Unfortunately, I spend so much time writing that I don't get to watch a lot of movies or TV as much as I would like. But I saw Parasite in theaters the other night.
I heard that was incredible.
And it's amazing. It's definitely probably my favorite movie of the year. It really blew me away, and I would urge everyone to go see Parasite. It's definitely it's not a big blockbuster type thing, but it's definitely a movie that is benefited by being in a movie theater.
I would imagine, yeah.
Just like it's got a lot of like, you know, you want to be sitting upright in the dark with no distractions. It's really fun. For TV shows, I'm actually watching a show. I don't think a lot of people have heard of it. It's called The Mandalorian. It's pretty good.
It's like weird space show, right?
The space show. No, actually, you know the show that I tell people to watch all the time, and people, you know, so everyone I know who watched this show thinks it's my favorite show of all time, I think, which is Patriot on Amazon.
Yeah, I'm not familiar, I'll be honest.
I think you give it two episodes, watch the first two episodes.
Okay.
And I think, you know, I say, like, it's my favorite show of all time, and there are a bunch of people who I've talked to who are like, oh yeah, me too. You know, there's a couple Marvel editors. I think Charles Soule said it might be his favorite show of all time.
Oh, wow.
Like, a bunch of us talk about it and are like, yeah, I think it's the best show I've ever seen. It's just two seasons. It's on Amazon. It's a spy show.
Oh, I'm in.
But it's like sort of like Coen Brothers made a spy thing about a super depressed spy who also writes folk music. And it sounds like it doesn't work, but it works. And it's like,
it sounds like one of your comics.
I just love it so much. It's the most I've ever laughed and cried in the same episode of a TV show.
Wow.
Where it's just like, well, it's brutally heartbreaking and one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
I really like Barry on HBO for kind of a similar reason.
I love Barry.
Isn't it great that Bill Hader's finally, like, people are finally realizing, like, how wonderfully great that guy is?
Yeah, yeah. I felt terrible because I didn't watch Barry for a long time, and a good buddy of mine, my buddy Duffy, is a writer and producer on the show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was a comics guy. He's a comics guy. He's a big comics fan, and he wrote a bunch of stuff. He wrote some Halo comics, and he wrote a book called Blackacre at Image, which is great.
I was going to say, Blackacre definitely rings a bell.
Yeah, it's a really fun, like, sort of dystopian, anti-corporate kind of thing. But he's one of the head writers on Barry, and it took me forever. And I was like, well, I'm going to go out to L.A. and see Duffy and his wife, Caitlin, and hang out with them. And I was like, I should really watch his show. And so I started watching it. And I was like, oh, wait, I love this so much.
Yeah, by, like, Barry's the first episode, I was so compelled that I ended up, I think I blew through the whole first season in, like, a weekend or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's so, I thought they were going to be hour-long episodes. So I was like, well, it's going to be a commitment. And then I was like, oh, these are half hour?
Damn, man.
Like, it's like popcorn. And then I'm trying to think what else. What else do you ask me? Music?
Like an album or artist you'd recommend, and like a comic or graphic novel you'd recommend.
I don't know. I listen to weird stuff. what was the last thing? I spent a lot of time yesterday. I was listening to the band Dangers from Seattle.
Yeah, great stuff.
Yeah, I was listening to Dangers all day yesterday. That's sort of my, like, when I need to write comics where people are angry, that is a definite go-to for me. Just really, really sort of smart, interesting, hardcore. They're the kind of band, like, they're a band, like, you know, every couple of years, they're sort of a hardcore band that, like, people who aren't into hardcore can get into.
Right, yeah. Like your Touche Amores and similar Touche bands.
Amore, yeah, Fucked Up, Turnstile. Like, Dangers is one of those bands that I think, like, if you're an indie rock kid, like, you'd still like Dangers. If you're like a hip hop kid, you might still like Dangers a lot.
Yeah.
Like, they're great. So yeah, I always love listening to Dangers, and I don't know what else I've been listening to.
Have you heard of a band called Sunstroke? Are you into them at all?
I don't know who that is.
I kind of get a similar vibe, like you said, where it's kind of one of those hardcore bands where, like, I feel like it has a lot of cross appeal, where, like, post hardcore kids might like it, and, like, punk kids might like it, and it came up on, like, one of my, you know, Apple Music does a kind of, like, weekly for you playlist based on what you listen to. And it popped up in there, and they actually, it was a Dag Nasty cover of Under Your Influence. And I was like, I'm in. Whoever this band is, I'm in.
That sounds awesome. I will check that out. And then comics, what have I been liking? Crowded at Image.
That's Chris Sabella, right?
Chris Sabella, I can never, he's one of the, I would put Chris in, like, the top three best idea men in comics.
Yeah. Have you ever read his Clown Motel zine?
I have, yeah.
Oh, it's so weird and wonderful. And that's actually how I came to know who he was, because one of those series of initial tweets of him staying there had gone viral. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
I was like, what is a Clown Motel? I was like, who is Chris Sabella? Like, I need to know more about all of these things right now.
Yeah. Chris is a genius, and I love everything he does, and his book Test is awesome, and
he's a really funny dude too.
Yeah, he's hilarious. But Crowded is sort of, I think, the most him book.
Okay.
And I think the best book, and I just love it, and it's, you know, like, going on to the second volume now, and it's great. And I don't know what else I've been reading that I really like. Kelly's Deadpool has been awesome.
Is that with Pacciolo? Or am I thinking of Pacciolo? Okay.
No, it's Chris on art, and it's I don't know. There's so much good stuff. Oh, Olympia from Image.
Okay.
That book is is like a soul crushingly brilliant. It's one of those books that you like when you're a comics writer and you read it, you like are like you either put it down and you're like, shit, I need to get back to work, or you're like, shit, I need to never work again.
Yeah, it's like it's almost like so good like, it's defeating kind of.
Yeah, yeah. You're like, oh, someone just lapped me, and do I, does it make me run harder, or do I just go hit the showers? But Olympia's awesome.
That's amazing. Well, hopefully everybody checks those out.
Just the second issue's out, so it's easy to jump on that book.
Oh, great. Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you, Matt. This has been really, really awesome. And again, I appreciate it so much, and hopefully we can do this again sometime when you've got some more cool books coming out.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was super fun.
Real quick, if you want to talk to Matt on Twitter, it is Ashcan Press, right? At Ashcan Press?
Yes.
Cool. Talk to him. Be nice. Don't be a jerk. Just have a conversation with Matt. He's a fun guy.
You can do whatever. I don't like all these rules. If you want to be a jerk to me, be a jerk.
That's fair. Well, Matt, thank you so much, and I hope you. I hope the rest of your interviews go well.
Thanks so much, man. Have a good night.